2 weeks until voters have their say on recreational marijuana. Again, from SDPB, it's Wednesday, October 23rd. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies bring you the history of numerous attempts to legalize marijuana in the state. We've got Jonathan Ellis with the Dakota Scout alongside former state senator Tom Dempster. We will also hear arguments this hour for and against initiated Measure 29. Matthew Schweik is executive director with South Dakotans for Better Marijuana Laws. He takes a criminal justice approach to changing the state's laws. And Dr. Bonnie Amdahl for Protecting South Dakota Kids lays out the negative health impacts of the drug. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. 88% of Americans say marijuana should be legal for medical or recreational use. That's 9 out of 10 Americans, and it's all according to the Pew Research Center. So how many South Dakotans want recreational marijuana to be legalized? In 2 weeks, we find out. South Dakota voters will decide on initiated Measure 29. Now, a yes vote would legalize small amounts of marijuana possession. A no vote would keep things the way they are today. Matthew Schweik is executive director with South Dakotans for Better Marijuana Laws. He's an advocate for initiated Measure 29. You have a strong history of studying cannabis reform and policy. What brought you into this world of why do you care about this issue so much?
Well, for two primary reasons. On the medical cannabis side, I really just think it's a question of right and wrong. People should have access to medical cannabis if it can help them alleviate, you know, conditions they're suffering from. And on the recreational side, I just think it's an injustice to arrest people and disrupt or even ruin their lives for something that's less harmful than alcohol. I feel strongly that in society, in order for laws to be just, they must be consistent. So long as alcohol is legal in our society, cannabis should be legal as well.
You could go after changing the laws and changing the way those laws are enforced, but you're trying to legalize cannabis. How come?
Well, I think you have to look at it from a public policy perspective, from a public health and public safety perspective. Right now, cannabis already exists in South Dakota. You know, we're not inventing marijuana with Measure 29. It's already here. The question is, how do we deal with that? Do we want to stick with a broken system of prohibition that hasn't worked for a century? Or do we want to take a pragmatic approach adopted by 24 other states? And in all of those 24 states, none of them have repealed the policy. I think that's very telling, because if our opponents were right that this really created a vast array of serious societal problems, I believe that at least one of those 24 states would have repealed the policy. And those 24 states include red states like Ohio, Montana, Alaska. So for me, it's about being pragmatic when it comes to public policy. The choice right now is to continue to let the illicit market handle marijuana, which means dealers who don't check IDs, who can't ensure product safety, who can't ensure product labeling, or shifting those sales into a regulated, safer system. In both instances, cannabis is going to exist in South Dakota, but with our approach, we can mitigate, I think, the public health and public safety issues that arise from marijuana use, which, again, is going to continue to take place in South Dakota, whether people like it or not.
So let's talk a little bit about what this looks like. If this law passes, the idea is that the products can be regulated, labeled, more understood better than perhaps they are now. That doesn't necessarily make them less dangerous if misused. Help people who have never lived in a community that has legal marijuana understand how people are going to be able to access the products and what they're going to know about the products if they're a first-time user.
Sure. I think it's important to acknowledge that Measure 29 doesn't actually create the regulatory system. It simply legalizes possession for individuals. Our expectation and hope is that the legislature will then take that next step and craft a regulatory system. To answer your question, I think it's important to note that this already does exist in South Dakota. We have a medical cannabis system. We have over 10,000 patients. And so we're seeing it in action. And really, we haven't seen any major problems arise from establishing and implementing the medical cannabis law. To directly answer what you asked, in a regulated system, somebody can go to a dispensary. They can have a sense of how strong a product is, the potency. They can have guidance on the dosage, how much of, for example, an edible to consume. There'll be people working in that business who can advise them on different types of products and the different effects that may have. I think it's quite similar to alcohol. Some people like to drink spirits. Some people like to drink wine. Some people like to drink beer. In the same way, somebody going to a cannabis dispensary will have different choices. But in our system, assuming the legislature enacts regulations, people can know what they're getting, know it's safe. Know that it doesn't have anything else in it, like fentanyl or PCP. They can look at the package and know exactly how much THC is in that package. They can look at the package and see how much THC is in each piece of chocolate. This is safer for people than going to the black market and not knowing what you're going to get.
So are you arguing harm reduction? Or are you arguing that it's not harmful?
I believe it's harm reduction. I'm not here to say that cannabis is harmless. It's an intoxicating substance. People should only do it in moderation. Young people should not use cannabis. And that's actually part of the reason why I think this is a good policy. Our opponents are called Protecting South Dakota Kids, but I don't think prohibition protects kids. I think regulation and control and shifting marijuana out of the hands of dealers and putting it into businesses is how you best protect children, because now you can actually enforce age rules. In many states, there have been studies that have found that kids have found it easier to access marijuana than alcohol for this exact reason, because they buy it from an illicit market that doesn't check IDs. The other, I think, important harm reduction is how severe our criminal penalties are currently, and a lot of people don't know this. Just 1 gram of marijuana could get you a misdemeanor and up to 1 year in county jail. Even one edible or a concentrate, a vape cartridge, that could be a felony, up to 5 years in county jail. Imagine, you know, if you're a parent and you've got kids, of course you don't want them to use marijuana, and you'll do your best to guide them in the right direction. But do you really want to see your child face a felony for something so small? Just having a bag of edibles in their car, that's a felony? Think of the impact that has on a young person's life. It can affect their educational opportunities, their employment opportunities. It can affect their ability to serve in the military. It can affect people's Second Amendment rights. So many negative effects come with those felony charges and those misdemeanor charges. I think that's serious harm to society. Incarcerating people needlessly and unjustifiably is harmful to people.
So in the states that have legalized recreational marijuana, it has not been problem-free. No one has repealed it, but they have had challenges. They have had some increased health risks. They've had some increased incidence of addiction. So we will see problems, and the illegal market has not gone away anywhere just because it's also legal. Help us understand, it's not going to eliminate a black market for marijuana.
It's not going to eliminate it overnight, but we are seeing the black market slowly disappear in these legal states. I think it's really important to recognize that we've
had a... How do you know that? Yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, look at the tax revenues increasing in these states. That's obviously, I believe that's displacing the black market. And it's important to recognize that this is a black market that's been embedded in our society for over a century. You know, to expect people's behaviors to instantly change isn't reasonable. I think we have to give the policy time. But as I'm looking at tax revenues increasing while usage rates sometimes are staying flat or only slightly increasing, that tells me that the regulated market is slowly and surely displacing the illicit market. Another huge factor is the tax rate applied. So in a place like Illinois, they set a tax rate way too high. And that meant that the legal regulated market couldn't compete with the black market. And when you set those tax rates too high and drive up the cost, that's a way you're going to help the black market persist. Whereas if we're more thoughtful about that tax rate, we can be more competitive and more quickly replace the black market. But I've never said it would happen overnight. These are, you know, again, this is a black market that's been in place for a century.
Let's talk about the tax opportunity here. It's not who gets to decide how it will be taxed.
legislature.
So let's say this passes, initiated measure 29 passes, and you're in the room with lawmakers who say, what now? What are some of the pieces of advice that you would give them that would say this is going to be good policy for the people of South Dakota? What the voters have spoken, they want this. Now you get to decide as lawmakers how to make good policy that does not harm people, that provides some kind of financial tax benefit, and where that tax benefit should go to help with any kind of the education about this or mitigating factors for any harms it might cause. What's good policy if it passes?
Well, first off, I think it's important to recognize all the good work that's been done on the medical cannabis program. There have been many bills passed over the years to fine-tune and improve that program. So a number of these legislators already have expertise in this area. It's about applying that now on a bigger scale. For me, I would caution that we should keep local control. I don't think that cities or towns should be forced to have medical dispensaries. I support letting cities and towns make that decision. That makes me a more conservative legalizer, quote unquote. With the tax rate, we should set a tax rate that can generate real revenue, but not set it so high that we slow down our ability to replace the black market. And in terms of how the revenue is used, I would defer to the legislature. I think this state could do more in terms of funding substance abuse treatment for the harder drugs that are really causing serious harm in our society. So if it were up to me, I would dedicate some of the funds there. But honestly, if it all went into the general fund, I actually think that's better fiscal policy to not carve out sources of revenue for specific programs, because the two things aren't always linked. We see this a lot in policymaking, and we're going to use this tax to fund this. Well, mm-hmm. the factors that impact what that tax revenue might not be the same factors that affect the need for the program you want to fund. So generally speaking, I'd rather see the funds go in the general fund and you know, that take that approach. But if they want to send it to a specific program, I would support it going to substance abuse, because the hard drugs that we have in our society are really the ones that are they're affecting lives in a really negative way.
Who are the undecided voters right now regarding this topic? When you knock on doors or when people come up to you and talk to you, and what are you hearing their question marks are?
I think it's typically older voters are more undecided on this. I think parents of kids who are in school right now, they have a tougher time supporting it. I mean, I understand that, right? Their parents, they're telling their kids, don't drink, don't smoke marijuana. And then they go to a voting booth and they vote yes on legalizing marijuana. I can understand the conflict there. Mm-hmm. But I want those people to consider, again, how harsh these current laws are and what a terrible impact it can have on a young person to have a felony or a misdemeanor charge when they're 18, 19, 20 years old. They're just starting out, trying to get their life going, trying to pursue a degree, trying to get, work, climb the career ladder, and all of a sudden they have the rug pulled out underneath them for having a joint in their car, or being caught with a packet of edibles in their pocket. We're talking felony charges. That is such a negative, it's such a harmful thing to do to a young person. So to the parents out there who are conflicted, who spent their entire time as parents trying to tell their kids to stay away from marijuana, consider the impact on your kids if they face that felony arrest and all the dreams and ambitions and aspirations that might mm-hmm. fall to the wayside. And also consider the argument that dealers aren't going to check IDs, and you're better off living in a society where cannabis is regulated and controlled as opposed to just letting the illicit market handle it.
So it passes, and you're one of those parents who were kind of conflicted, but you filled in that bubble for yes because they believe what you're saying and they're going to give it a shot. Now their kid comes home and says, well, heck, it's legal. That can't be that bad. It's legal. Give me the script as a parent that I need to say next.
What would they say about alcohol to their kid? If their child came in and said, well, alcohol is legal, I want to try that. Well, the age is 21. You're a kid. You shouldn't be drinking. The same exact statement would apply to marijuana.
I think
marijuana.
What I'm trying to get at with all these interviews is this idea that, marijuana is here and we're having the conversation. And if this passes, we're going to be having a lot more conversations. And there are a whole lot of people who don't know anything. So is it an equivalent? Is letting your 18-year-old smoke a joint equivalent to letting your 18-year-old have a beer at dinner?
I think both are inadvisable. I see alcohol as a very harmful drug in our society. I perhaps am a little different than others. When I look at alcohol, I see a drug that makes people violent, reckless. If you ask a cop who's, you know, been called to the scene of a domestic violence incident, ask them how many times it's alcohol versus marijuana. And also, there's a really important measurement for comparing these drugs, which is if you put enough in your body, will you die? You can't do that with cannabis. If you put enough alcohol in your body, you will die of alcohol poisoning. So for those reasons, I consider alcohol a harder drug. I don't think young people should be consuming either. So I would say the same thing to, you know, to a parent who has to deal with that situation, whether it's alcohol or marijuana. I don't think an 18-year-old should be drinking a beer or smoking a joint. I think the age should be 21. That's what's in Measure 29. And, you know, I think, again, alcohol is a harder, more dangerous drug, but we should at least treat them the same from the perspective of what the law is.
That's Matthew Schweik, Executive Director at South Dakota for Better Marijuana Laws. He's an advocate of Initiated Measure 29. We'll hear from an opponent of the measure later in the hour. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota lost a political icon this month. Former U.S. Senator Tim Johnson passed away on October 8th at the age of 77. Johnson never lost an election. After working in state politics, he served as our U.S. representative from 1987 to 1997 before moving to the Senate to serve from 1997 to 2015. He was also the last Democrat to hold statewide office in South Dakota. Today, we remember a bit of the life and legacy of Senator Tim Johnson with our Dakota Political Junkies. We'll also look forward to the upcoming election and a conversation about Initiated Measure 29. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the independent news journal, The Dakota Scout. Tom Dempster is a former South Dakota State Senator.
This was a really fitting tribute to Senator Johnson, I thought. I mean, his two sons spoke at length about what kind of father he was, brought out that personal side. He was a very devoted family man. Stories about how he always went to their events. Brendan Johnson had a funny line that he never missed family dinners and he never missed church. And he had a rule for the kids that if they were too sick to go to church, they were too sick to watch television. So that was the family side of him. And there was probably more of that than the policy side. Senator Daschle talked a little bit about that and how and their friendship over the years. Representative Herseth Sandland talked about how she'd gone from being an intern to running on the same ticket with him a decade later and just some of the things they got done in Congress. And you know, I think that his influence, when you spend 18 years in Congress, or I should say 28 years in Congress, because 10 of that was in the House, and you spend as much time on the Appropriations Committee as he did,
sure.
The influence that Tim Johnson has had on this state is being felt and will be felt for generations.
Yeah. Senator Dempster, memories of U.S. Senator Tim Johnson.
Well, it's a wonderful thing at your funeral for the introductory prayer to say he holds the people of South Dakota in his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding Jonathan's comments about making dinner and always being there for dinner, the dinner that Senator Johnson made his kids would be two pieces of bread and a piece of cheese and microwaved.
That was how he made grilled cheese sandwiches.
If that was insufficient, then we had Raisin Bran for breakfast. So what's the problem with Raisin Bran for dinner?
Yeah. So they wanted mom to cook, is what you're saying in general. Barb put on a great meal.
I think that would be a requirement. But here's what I saw over and over and over again. I saw Tim Johnson as if he were standing in a field in the middle of South Dakota. And here's what Tim Johnson would say. A blizzard? No problem. A drought? Oh, there'll always be next year. He had a resolve that no matter what came his way, he would take on. Traditionally, of course, he would be a stoic, wouldn't he? He would carry with him a simple acuity that I understand was absolutely extraordinary, that if he knew something, you wouldn't necessarily know that he knew it, but he really knew it and was very, very bright. What I saw during that entire ceremony was Senator Johnson standing in the field as if he were in a Harvey Dunn painting, a man of indomitable will. Again, the farmer standing in his field. Oh, I see your roof blew off last night. Oh, well, we can fix that. But yet a man where no means no and yes means yes. The thing that also really hit me is it's an extraordinary thing to have a Senate seat taken away from you. Larry Pressler lost to Tim Johnson. Larry Pressler was there. It's an extraordinary thing for John Thune to lose a Senate race at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning when the results of the election on the Indian reservations was released, and he had won the election before he now lost the election. John Thune was there. And that just really impresses me with, these are politicians, these are South Dakota politicians, they're men of the soil, they'll take all comers, no means no, yes means yes. It was really impressive.
Yeah. Lots to remember about his legacy. People of both parties there. Governor Kristi Noem there mm-hmm. as well. She worked with him. So the influence, Jonathan, that he has on people of all parties probably will be remembered for quite some time, even if you didn't agree with his policy, for example.
He was one of a politician who never came across as inauthentic. And I should point out that I pre-wrote an obit. And in our industry, we pre-write obituaries for important people. And so in doing the research for Tim Johnson's eventual obituary, you know, I talked to Joel Dykstra, the person he beat in the 2008 race. Again, said very, just a very respectful guy. So even his competitors, you know, Larry Pressler, John Thune, who were there, you know, paid their respects to him.
Yeah.
He was authentic in a sense. And Michael Card, USD professor, who we I have on as one of your guests, mm-hmm. you know, one of the people I interviewed for the obituary said he was sort of that last of a dying breed who moved his family to Washington, D.C., stayed, you know, they stayed in Washington, D.C. because that was a more collegial atmosphere back then. And yet he still was able to keep that South Dakota authenticity.
Yeah. All right, speaking of the politics of the future, let's talk about what's coming up, because the election is, what, like 2 weeks away. Now we are on the home stretch. Things are going to get ramped up. And in my world, even though we've been doing stories on every ballot question since, you know, for months, people will now start asking me, so what is amendment what? So to that point, some people are just starting to pay attention, and that is okay. Welcome aboard. Let's talk today about Initiated Measure 29, because this is recreational marijuana. Jonathan, the last 20 years, according to the Pew Research Center, the public opinion on marijuana, medical and recreational, has shifted a lot. What we don't know is how much it's shifted in South Dakota. But this isn't the first time that people have been asked to show up and speak up about how they feel about marijuana. What do you want to lay out historically, Jonathan, that you think is relevant for listeners today?
Well, third consecutive election that a recreational marijuana has been on the ballot. If it doesn't pass this time, the sponsors say we're basically done. Point out that, you know, how has opinion shifted? 2006 or 2008, I believe there was a medical marijuana initiative on the ballot. It came very close to passing. And they did a repeat there, and there had not really been a campaign against it. So then the next election, there was a repeat. This time, the Medical Association put a ton of money into defeating it, and it went down pretty easily. And so that had been now then over a decade before, you know, we get that back on the ballot in 2020. And medical marijuana is something that was pretty overwhelmingly supported. So in that decade plus, I think a lot did shift. The recreational is a different deal for some people, mm-hmm. For a lot of people. And I'm shocked that it's gotten as close as it failed last time. It did pass the first time, and that was overturned by the Supreme Court because it violated the one subject rule. And it maybe passed. I mean, the argument that the opponents had for taking it to court maybe was because voters were confused. It had, you know, had hemp, it had medical marijuana. But anyway, that's the history. So no doubt that opinions across the country and even in South Dakota have definitely softened on, illegal marijuana. You know, they don't want people put in jail for it. They don't want law enforcement necessarily diverted, resources diverted for that.
Right. All right, Tom. It's a very simple question, really. And the regulatory framework of how it will be regulated would be up to lawmakers.
Eventually,
if it passes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in this ballot question that you find interesting politically?
Here's what I see in this ballot question that is fascinating politically. Every voter needs to know that he or she is making a Faustian choice. He's making a contract with the devil. And the devil is this. Do I want increased access to marijuana for my children and for my grandchildren? Or do I want them exposed to felony charges in South Dakota? Jonathan talks about the marijuana question being in South Dakota for 10 years, and indeed it has been. And about 10 years ago, I was in Italy at Lake Como. We had a Rotary Youth Exchange student that stayed with us for a year. We fell in love with her, and as a result, we went to her wedding at Lake Como. And there was a big convention at that hotel, and it was a marijuana convention. And the guy that I talked to at that marijuana convention looked at me, and he says, you Americans, he says, you're just so crazy. Because 5 years ago, we started looking at this, and we're going to take another 5 or 10 years to take a look at it, to understand all of the consequences, all of the cost, and everything about legalizing marijuana. You Americans, what you do is you just do it. And so what we've done is we now have 24 states in the United States where marijuana is legal. South Dakota is one of 4 states who has the most extreme penalties, a felony for your children or for your grandchildren.
I'm going to jump in because I'm not sure if people think that marijuana usage is the hellmouth that Faust is going to get dragged into at the end.
Say that again.
I don't know that the Faust, that moderate, legal marijuana use that's regulated, labeled, and available in a dispensary is really a deal with the devil. I'm not sure how many people would agree with you on that, even if they don't want this measure to pass. I'm not sure how many people think it's as extreme as maybe...
As I stated that it is.
I don't know.
It's fascinating because the New York Times just had an in-depth article in talking about the consequences of increased marijuana use in the United States. And in Aurora, Colorado, for example, almost daily, they say, here comes another one. THC levels in today's marijuana is 99% as opposed to 5% of what it used to be. Those people, according to the New York Times article, who use marijuana in excess are all going to have some problems with psychosis and schizophrenia, so on and so forth. So the question is, same thing is true with alcohol. Use it, don't abuse it, or do you want to face a felony charge?
Mm. Jonathan, what would you add to this?
Well, it's an interesting conversation. For one thing, I didn't read the New York Times story. There's a lot of competing studies in this area, and the caveat is that they're funded by people who are by groups who are absolutely opposed to marijuana, and they're looking for anything they can. And they're funded by pro-marijuana groups. It's really hard to find good studies that you can trust. I have seen studies that suggest that youth use actually went down in Colorado after it went. Now, again, I'm from Colorado.
I found that study, too. So, I mean, it is mixed results, and I agree with you. As I'm looking and looking and looking, it is... It's one of the muddier places because it's fairly new, because it's hard to put a ton of money into researching. How are you going to research marijuana use upon kids in a, you know... peer-reviewed journal, right? You're not going to. There's some ethical barriers, and there's been some societal stigma to researching it. So a lot of the research is difficult to sort through. Is what I'm saying. It's kind of hard.
This is a result.
Nobody says it's good for you.
I don't think
nobody says excess use is good for you. No one's arguing that. To be clear,
this is a result though of our frankly insane federal drug laws for decades that you couldn't do research. I mean, it was very tightly controlled by the DEA. Any type of research. That even included in the medical field, too. So, yes, to your point, Tom, about Europeans saying you're crazy, because there was no way to really study this stuff.
Yeah.
Because I was having some communications with a a public official, an elected official today, about a story I wrote about a property tax ballot measure mm-hmm. being approved for circulation, or, you know, for circulation. And my point of the story was that there's a property tax revolt coming if lawmakers don't figure something out. And it's not unusual for our system of governments, I said this on X today, to not actually deal with problems. They get so out of control that something else comes along. And let me give you an example. Republicans had an opportunity during the 2000s to deal with spiraling healthcare premium costs. They did not do a thing, even though there were ample warnings like this is going to blow up on you. And thus it does with the Affordable Care Act in 2010. Because they didn't deal with it, something else big happens. This is going to happen with property taxes. Now, going back to marijuana, the proponents here will say, yeah, 24 states, and not one of them want to go back. You know, you're not hearing, let's go back. And I'm going back to Colorado. I haven't looked at the data recently, but I will say that legalization did provide a lot of money for schools. So if you're looking at property taxes, you're looking at perhaps giving counties some consumption tax ability with alcohol sales. You're not going to get some of these things without a broader tax package, and that has to and probably would include property taxes. If you throw cannabis taxation in there, I mean, you're talking about probably some pretty decent revenue.
We don't know.
This would be up to the legislature.
Right. This is going to be up to the legislature because right now we do not know if this could be taxed.
We interviewed the framers of this, and they intentionally want it taxed. And they've intentionally tried to make this as simple as possible, so to give the legislature a lot of latitude to color in the dots there.
Which legislature, Tom? Because it's not going to be the seated legislature right now. Let's say that the consumables tax repeal passes and recreational marijuana passes, then that's going to be decided by the people who take office in January.
Indeed.
Will there be a special session where the governor would say, no, I want the legislators from last session to make decisions? Will there be pressure for that? Any political gamesmanship that happens after the election day before January with our current governor and the current makeup of the state house?
So we don't yet know the consumables tax, whether that's a $128 million deficit or a $650 million deficit. We have no idea what a 1 or 2 or 10% tax on marijuana use would generate. It certainly isn't going to be any number between $128 and $600 some million dollars. It's going to be a very, very difficult legislative session, particularly if sales tax passes or user or consumable taxes pass. It's going to be a very difficult legislative session, and it's going to require some really, really smart, capable people.
That was Jonathan Ellis, co-founder of the Dakota Scout, and former state legislator Tom Dempster. SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies is also a podcast. You can hear the rest of this conversation online at sdpb.org/news or find it on your favorite podcast platform. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, we're turning our focus to Initiated Measure 29. That's a ballot question that would legalize small amounts of recreational marijuana in South Dakota. Earlier in the hour, you heard from Matthew Schweik. He's on the proponent side. Now we're going to hear from somebody who would urge you to vote no on the measure. Dr. Bonnie Amdahl represents Protecting South Dakota Kids. She's a retired physician. We are going to start with IM-29, recreational marijuana, for some undecided voters. And you think undecided voters at this point are kind of in two camps. How would you describe the people that are talking to you and saying, I haven't made up my mind, because why?
A lot of people say to me that they think it will bring in money to South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, I'm not going to do it. My kids aren't going to do it. What do I care if other people do it? First, let me speak to the money piece, because people are traveling around the state saying it's going to bring in big money to the state. Read the bill. There's no tax provision in this bill. So if you vote for this, you're not voting for any increased taxes to South Dakota at this point, because it's not in there. And the industry has done that on purpose, because of course they're going to make more money if there's no taxes. Secondly, it's, I don't think, a coincidence that IM-28 was put in at the same time as this one, because if I am 28 passes, they deliberately worded it not related to food, but related to substance consumed by humans. So there would be no tax, no tax. So zero income under this bill. We need to understand you're not increasing South Dakota's coffers. Also, in Colorado, after they legalized, they have found that they spend $4.50 for every dollar of tax income that they bring in. So it doesn't matter how much money you bring in.
They spend it on what?
They spend it frequently on health-associated issues regarding marijuana.
Do you know if that's increased over time, or did that spike all at once? Do you know how that has changed since they legalized marijuana?
It seems to be increasing over time because there are many downstream effects of this. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we that Colorado has seen with the ER data is that it increases the use not only of marijuana but also of hard drugs. Okay, and so they have seen increases in their admits for not only marijuana but for opioids and methamphetamines as well.
How do we know that's connected? That could be unrelated. An increase in using other drugs could be unrelated to the legalization of recreational marijuana, could it not? Do we have evidence of causality?
Most alcohol and drug counselors, and this is documented in books in multiple areas, say that marijuana is truly a gateway drug for many people.
Right. The argument has always been that it's a gateway drug because if you're going to your dealer to get marijuana and you look at the table, they also have more stuff for you. So the argument has always been that it's not that marijuana itself is the gateway drug. It's that you are now on that black market. You are out somewhere you shouldn't be. And that if we remove that and put it in a legal dispensary, you're only going to have in front of you legal, regulated things to purchase. That's not going to. So I'm very curious about this information of how they know that's.
Well, it's incredibly, incredibly naive to argue that if you legalize it, it decreases the black market. It does nothing but the opposite. And the states that have legalized show this. If you look at the high intensity drug traffic area reports, you'll see that the black market is alive and well in the states that have legalized. Forbes magazine in 2021 estimated that the black market income was more than four times the legal income. And so the black market is going to stay alive and well. Legalization will not change that. And of course, what that does is when there's money to be made, the cartels will come in, and with that comes all of the associate crimes and other drugs. As you've pointed out, all the associate crimes and other drugs, along with human trafficking. So Colorado has seen spikes in a lot of that. One of the things is that in Colorado, they had the option, each town had the option to decide whether to allow it or not. And about 60% of the towns did not. That is not in this South Dakota bill. We do not have that option here. It will be legal everywhere. And if you look at the difference in crime statistics between the towns that legalized and those that didn't, you will see a big difference there. Mm. So as far as it being a gateway drug for the drug and alcohol counselors, I think that is interviewing their patients is where they are getting that. Mm-hmm.
Are saying, I started with this, and then
yes,
I moved on to something
exactly
else.
Okay. Now, not everybody. That's sure. True. Not yeah. Everybody. But here's the thing. The marijuana of today is not the marijuana of the 70s, okay? In the 70s, the THC content was about 4%. Today, the plants alone are 21% plus. And if you're talking edibles, you're talking 40 to 60% THC content. And dabs and oils can go up to 90 plus, okay? So significant change in the drug. And what we've seen with the change in that drug, it's become much more addictive. People didn't used to think marijuana was addictive. If you look at the CDC website, even they will tell you that the substance use disorder rate for marijuana can be up to 30%. One of the things Protecting South Dakota Kids is so concerned about is all of these effects are worsened in children. And those who use as teenagers have a much more rapid addiction rate than those who start as adults. One of the arguments they make is, well, this isn't going to be legal for kids. But what we are seeing, particularly from interviews with teenagers, is that one of their primary sources may well be their parents. And there are multiple studies in the medical literature showing that if the parents are using, the kids are much more likely to use. I mean, that only makes sense, right? So in the states that have legalized, they have a higher use rate than those that haven't. You might say causation, et cetera. The fact is they have a higher use rate among youth than in states that haven't legalized. It may be availability. Who knows?
So it's not the same product as it was in the 1970s, for people who might remember that. We're also not living in the same society, and this has normalized in a way that there's way more acceptance of marijuana use in our society than perhaps ever before. Why not regulate it, label it, make a point of quality control for the products? Why not bring it into a regulated industry, tax it, and try to figure out how to manage and control it, similar to alcohol, similar to cigarettes and tobacco products? Why not come to that moment in our culture?
Well, if you truly believe that, and then it's all about personal freedom, et cetera, take a good long look at Oregon and Washington State and that general area up there. Because once you legalize drugs that are, and people will argue marijuana isn't meth, et cetera, it's got some incredible dangers to it. And the thing is, if you truly believe that, then legalize all drugs. We've seen what a mess that is, right? So what is the benefit? What would be the benefit to South Dakota or to the individual to legalize another addictive drug that really doesn't have a benefit? If you want to compare it to alcohol, and I'm not here to defend alcohol, okay, but let me say there are a few things that are different. First of all, you can have a drink or two during the course of the evening and not be high. Not so with marijuana. Secondly, marijuana is fat soluble, whereas alcohol is water soluble. So alcohol is going to flush out of the body a lot faster than marijuana does. And where's one of the primary fat cells in your body? Well, it's in your brain. So it concentrates in the brain. It's one of the reasons why the blood tests for marijuana are not really accurate as to how much impairment the person is experiencing. They frequently are experiencing more impairment, and it frequently lasts longer. Interesting study out of New Zealand a few years ago. They took a group of pilots, volunteers, and of course, marijuana has been legal in some of the other countries across the world for a while. And so some of these studies come from those countries, and they have a lot more data. Anyway, they gave pilots marijuana, waited 24 hours, asked who feels competent to fly, and most all of them did. And yet, they didn't put them in a real plane. They put them in a flight simulator. Mm-hmm. 60% would have totally missed the runway. These are experienced pilots. It's difficult to assess the degree of impairment because it stays within the brain for so long. And it chemically alters the pleasure receptors in the brain. It's one of the reasons why ultimately it is a problem with depression and anxiety, especially for teenagers. They're seeing more and more, and the studies are just confirming this in the states that have legalized, that it can be a long-term problem with depression and anxiety. These kids, it's the number one drug associated with teen suicide in Colorado. And frequently, when they write about the depression and anxiety, and they see no end in sight. One of the things is that with this high-potency marijuana, if they get the real intense psychotic episodes, and you increase your risk of psychosis with this new THC content marijuana, increases your risk of psychotic episodes 5 times, okay? And I have personally seen that when I was still practicing medicine. You'd have someone come in just crazy out of their mind, paranoid, scared, violent, and the head CT was negative. And I'd call the ER doc and say, okay, what is this person on? Are they on meth? And they'd say, no, it's marijuana. I'd say, really? I mean, this is back when I was clueless. Okay, I was just going along thinking not a big deal, right? But I started to see these. It is now the number one cause for psychotic admissions due to drugs in California ERs. past methamphetamine.
Unpack this idea of harm. If you vote yes to legalize recreational marijuana, what harm might be caused to what people because you voted yes? If you vote no, one of the hypotheticals would be these people who are coming to the ER who have been using illegally are now going to be afraid of, you know, criminal prosecution. They might not tell their doctor. They might not tell the ER physician why their friend is here because they're afraid of incarceration, because they are afraid of the felony laws for using in South Dakota. By legalizing it, it might give an opportunity for more people to get help for an addiction problem they have or for a one-time incident that they've used something that they didn't quite know what was in it. So as a physician, you're balancing these ideas of harm a little bit.
Well, the other thing is that simply by legalizing it, it increases the risk that people will use, especially kids. And multiple studies have shown that legalization decreases the perception of harm. The news media doesn't get out the word about the actual harms of this. So especially kids are going to be inclined to try it. All the studies show that when you legalize it, it increases the risk of people using it. So when you vote yes, you increase the risk that your kids and grandkids are going to use it, okay? And as far as bringing people into the ER, I mean, it's illegal to get drunk too, but that doesn't stop people. I don't think that will
make... You mean
it's
illegal to drive drunk? Or yeah. It's not illegal to get drunk for an
adult.
Yeah,
to be out in public and et cetera. But that's the thing, is that I don't think that keeping it illegal stops people from getting the help they need. I think it's like any other addiction. There are certain milestones that a person will run into that will make them get the help they need. As far as bringing people to the ER, I would hope that anyone who is a true friend would bring someone to the ER who needed help, whether they were worried about it or not. And my niece is an ER doc in Colorado. It's not all that uncommon to have someone drive up to the door, boost out an unconscious person, say they OD'd, and they drive off. Okay. They bring them to the ER to get the help. And frequently that's fentanyl or whatever. But I think they would get the help. As far as what other harm does it do, let's talk about that. When you legalize, they've shown that testing in the workplace goes up. Positive tests in the workplace go up. Even in safety-sensitive jobs, it goes up. Those who test positive are 55% more likely to have an industrial accident. Absenteeism goes up 75%. And those that are injured, if they're testing positive, are 85% more likely to be seriously injured than those who aren't testing positive. So this is what one of the things that's going to happen to the workplace when you legalize. As far as driving, fatalities with the driver using marijuana went up 138% in Colorado after legalization. It more than doubled in Washington State. And those 25% of people who use regularly say they drive high all the time, every day. 60% say they drive high occasionally. And part of that is, like we talked earlier, well, you really don't have that in between, like you do with alcohol, where you can have one drink, probably not be impaired. That's not the case with marijuana.
That's Dr. Bonnie Omdahl, spokesperson for Protecting South Dakota's Kids. She's an opponent of Initiated Measure 29. You can find all our coverage on the upcoming election on our website, sdpb.org. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.